My name's Bernadette Russell. Welcome to episode 10 of How to Be Hopeful, a podcast all about hope, how to find it and how to keep hold of it once we've found it. During the course of researching and thinking about this subject, whilst I was writing my book of the same name, I thought a lot about how possible it was to find hope in the face of very difficult things such as illness, suffering, mourning, grieving, dying. And in order to discuss this and explore it a little bit further, I'm very delighted to be joined by Nikki Jones, a palliative care nurse. And I was able to talk to and discuss with her the possibilities and the purpose and the usefulness of hope in these experiences. I hope you enjoy listening to our conversation.
I'm Nikki Jones, and I am pretty good at this moment, all good, a little bit tired, did a night shift, not last night, but the night before, so a little bit tired, but all right, and we've had a good home learning morning, so that's good too.
Brilliant. I'm good. And I suppose I should say at this point that you are, well, you're many things, but one of them is a palliative care nurse in a hospice. Which is what your night shift was. You weren't sort of moonlighting as a
doing anything naughty. Yeah.
And could you just talk a little bit about, Nikki, how you first decided to be a nurse and why you chose that particular specialism, if you can remember? Yeah. Of course you can remember. You've not gone lost your memory.
Well, I don't know, actually. I was thinking about that question. I was thinking maybe have gone a little bit mad, because I was thinking, what? How did I even get into nursing? I don't know. But I think the nursing thing was, at the time when I started, it was you actually got paid to nurse, so you didn't have to pay for training. It wasn't like a university thing, and it wasn't a degree course. And I think I've always been a very practical person. I did quite a lot of sort of volunteering and sort of special need. I did a special needs camp in America. And I think I was encouraged in the family that I was quite caring. So they thought it might be a good thing. And because I wasn't really academic, I was always, more socially sort of bright, I'd say, I just sort of floated into it. And then just lucked out and chose the Royal Free in London to train at. And then when I was there in my, 3 years, get to work on all the wards, and I worked on a cancer ward, and I just loved it. And I'd always had this funny dream that I was going to be a Macmillan nurse. I didn't really even know what they did. And at that time, it was a very different role than Macmillan plays now. It's a very diverse role, funding lots of people. By the time, I think I thought it would be with dying people. And why? I hadn't really had loads of experience in my family life, just usual sort of grandparents. I hadn't had I've been very lucky to not have a real experience of death. So I don't really know why I thought that would suit me. And then it just, when we went, I went on the oncology ward, it just really clicked. And then I just sort of, then I actually didn't get a job on the oncology ward, and I wanted one when I qualified. And I ended up on a baby unit, and actually one of the sisters there was incredible, and she said, "You're really good with the grown-ups, but I don't think it's your thing," which I think is really brave. And she said, "There's a job going at a hospice, and maybe that would really be you." And she said, I don't want you to think I'm criticizing you. And I think she just got me, and I'm always really grateful to her for that. She was wonderful. Then I started working in a hospice, and then I sort of moved around, and I worked on an oncology ward. But yeah, so I think I sort of, like most people do when they're 19, I didn't really have a massive vision of my life. I never really have had, but I think it just sort of floated into it, and it sort of suited me. And and that's sort of why I think I nursed, because I had that sort of caring thing.
It just sounds like such an amazing journey. It's interesting, isn't it, that sometimes we are lucky enough to meet the right people at the right time to help us steer ourselves, yeah. Like your colleague who sort of helped you make that choice. When you, it was interesting that you said about that was funded in a way it's not funded now, because I think about that, yeah, a lot, about people choosing to do that. And so we'll come back to that in a moment. But just for now, when you first trained, did you have any particular things that you wanted to achieve? And has that changed or developed since you've become a seasoned professional?
I was thinking about that, and I was really laughing because I was thinking, oh no, because I think when you're in your 20s, when I qualified, I think what I was trying to achieve was just, I mean, I think there's a lot of research about this, and there's a bit of research that most nurses know, which is about novice to expert. It's about, you know, when you first start, you're really just doing what you've learned in your training. You know, that's all you've got to go. That's all you've really got as your foundation, like everyone, and probably like
when you first pass your driving test.
Yeah, you know that you indicate, you do everything by text, but you've got no sort of body of experience to go by. You've got no like, oh blimey, I need to go quickly on this roundabout because I'll not be here all day, have you? You've got like, well no, I must let the people on the right go by, you know. So yeah, it's very similar. And I think as you go, your aspirations and your hopes are very much on your experience in a way, because when I was first went on the wards, it was just like, get by, don't let anyone know, you don't know what the hell you're talking about, and just hope for the best. But now I'm very confident in what I don't know and what I know, and I don't ever feel a need. In fact, I'm probably the first to say, do you know what, I don't know that, but I think I know someone who might, or I don't think anyone's going to know that. And I don't have that, which is a lovely place to be. I don't have that worry about flannelling people, you know, or that sort of, which, you know, didn't have a name, but you know, that imposter syndrome that every new job I've had that, and now that it's got a name, it makes it ever so much feel much better. Whereas, you know, you think, oh, it's all right, bit of imposter syndrome.
Yeah, no, it's really useful to have those expressions sometimes, and lovely, I agree with you, it's lovely to have the confidence that experience brings to say, I don't know, requires confidence, doesn't it? That's a really good moment. I like that novice to expert thing. Do you have, I know this is like asking you to choose your favourite child or your favourite record, but do you have a sort of
particular... They do it regularly.
I won't ask you to do that because I'll be in trouble with them both. Do you have a memory that you could share?
A favourite son and a favourite daughter.
You've got one of each, we should say. Do you have a memory that you could share of a moment as a nurse in the hospice that you felt especially proud or moved by, and something that encouraged you and made you really glad that you worked as a nurse?
Yeah, loads. I mean, I've got honestly really feel like, without being sort of gushy about it or trite, I mean, I do think that there's not really a shift that goes by without something thinking, oh, that was just, that you feel a bit honoured, really. And I cringe when I hear other people saying it, but you do feel a bit honoured, especially in palliative care and the hospice and the Martlets, which is where I work now. You know, it's that amazing thing that we have little miracles every day and little, you know, amazing things. So, but my favourite thing, to be specific, or you know, one of my favourite memories is when we had a patient dying, and their partner and their dog were there, and we ended up just forming a little circle, the dog, the patient, the partner, just held each other's hands. And it was just the most, the you know, I'm not a big one on sort of auras and things like that, making you upset. But the feeling in the room was just one of just like love and warmth. And it was one of those little doggies that it actually cocked his head. It was like one of those dogs that you go, so-and-so, I can't remember his name, but so-and-so, and it would go, oh, and it put his head to the side. And it just knew what was happening. I felt really privileged to be there, really honoured. And, you know, I felt that as well. And I felt proud that we were able to just, there was no, like, you can't put the dog on the bed. You know, there's none of that. And that's what the beauty is at working in a lovely hospice where people are encouraged to do those little special things that won't be forgotten. And I think that that's just absolutely one of my favourite moments. Just, you know, I felt so honoured. And I don't even think the people, you know, the partner maybe knew how honoured we felt. They just, you know, they were in their journey. But
I think it's amazing to me the sort of culture of or the possibilities of what can happen in hospices. It's beautiful that you can allow that sort of thing to happen. Having had a friend who spent the end of his life in hospice and the whale of a time he had in there, Nikki, with his all his ex-girlfriends and bottles of Prosecco.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just fantastic. It's very encouraging, actually, not to diminish any of the suffering that goes on, but I find it really encouraging the more I find out about it. Now, we're going to go back to that. I'm going to mention COVID, just because at the moment, as we're speaking, we are still in the thick of it.
Yeah.
Or maybe in the thinner thick of it.
I don't know.
We don't know. And I know you're continuing to work now. You're one of our amazing hero. I know you probably don't like me saying that, but one of the many heroes that we're privileged to have is working in the midst of this lockdown. And I wondered, we will move away from it, but I wondered if you could just talk a little bit about how that's going for you and how you and your hospice have had to adapt to the pandemic whilst it's been going on.
Yeah. So it's been really up and down. I think, you know, I think for everybody, I don't think there's one person that will say, yeah, I've smashed it, you know, unless, you know, that they haven't noticed anything's going on. But so at work, it's been very, very different. It's been the main thing that's been different and personally difficult, and I know from my lovely colleagues we've all felt the same, is that we haven't got any visitors. We're not allowed visitors, so our patients aren't allowed them. So that's huge. And I think that we're a bit more settled now, you know, putting your PPE on and everything is a very much a matter of, you know, you just do it. And, you know, I can't deny I don't quite like it. It's like dressing up. And because, you know, because we're a charity and we're getting our stock, probably maybe it's not always the same thing. So the different coloured mask and the different colours, you know, there's funny little things that you can take your joy with. But I think going back to what I said was having no visitors is really weird because it's like the soul's taken out. Not that anyone's done that, but because we, you know, our manager's been amazing and, you know, everything's been done so quickly. But, you know, it's trying to keep some social distancing when we are not face-to-face contact with the patients and, you know, when we're doing our handovers and things like that, it's being sort of trying to keep the risks down for us as well. It's just it's very strange and things can change within, you know, if I've had, it was quiet for a while, so I had took some time off and came back and it's just like little things have changed and you feel like you're constantly catching up. But I think it's just really odd not having the buzz and, like, you know, obviously we, like saying before, we have dogs and cats and goldfish and you name it. And there's a really busy, we have a huge day services and there's lots of people around in the canteen. And, you know, usually it's a very sort of buzzy, warm atmosphere. And I think it's really odd that it's just the staff who are needed for the shift. So it's not just nurses or doctors, it's, you know, our family support are there, our chaplain and, you know, our social workers. So people do come down, but I've been doing mainly nights. So it's just felt like very strange and sort of like we're just, what I came up with when it first all happened and it was changing so rapidly and it was just really quite a lot to keep up with, was, look, this is a job that I'm just doing for the moment. It's like it's like I've been given a new temporary job. It just happens to be in the same place. And that I'm just going to go in, just being ready, imagining that it's a new job, do my best and do what I know. And then it's fine because the old job will come back. So that's sort of how I've coped with it, that this is a different job at the moment and I'm doing it. And at least I've got people I know with me and, you know, we're in it, we're all in it together, but just see it as a temporary, not forever. And I think that helps.
Yeah, I think that's a really healthy way of looking at it. It was interesting when you were talking, Nikki, I was thinking, well, That is a big deal, though, in the absence of being able, people being able, allowed to have visitors. I'm assuming that puts quite a lot of weight on you in terms of care and love and a sort of attention, given that some people might be at the end of their lives. That's a heavy thing for you to carry. Do you feel supported sort of within that as well? Because obviously you're all carrying a heavier burden, aren't you?
Yeah, I think we are supported. I think it gets you in funny ways, and I think there's nobody, there's amazing support. I mean, there's amazing support available. I mean, you're sort of accountable for what you decide to take, or how, I mean, we all have our own coping ways, so coping strategies, and, you know, we have our own sort of level of resilience and things that we will find difficult and things we don't. And I think, you know, I think I'm quite resilient because I've been doing it a long time, and I think I sort of thrive on some of the things that maybe other people would find difficult. But I think, you know, we have got obviously got good strategies in place, obviously, so people can visit dying patients. But that's difficult, and it's not fluid like it would be. And I think the other thing to say that I've really struggled with, and I think we might come to it anyway in a bit, but it is the everything's got to be thought out. So because you're in PPE, you can't just like hug someone. And I think I just didn't realise how much our colleagues as well. You can't hug, or you can't just give it, holding someone's hand, or somebody, you know, one of the patients telling you something really, really profound, and you put a gloved hand out. It's just not, it sort of feels a bit like it's not good enough. But also on top of that, you know, it is good enough because it's what we have to do, and we have to just be creative and find ways around it. And, you know, I work with amazing people, and, you know, we support each other, and, you know, and I think there's been some really good sort of well-being. There's lots for us to use if we need it. So it's there, you know. I think there's a lot. Then there's a lot of understanding that we might need extra support, and
I guess afterwards as well. Whilst we're sort of talking about that, we're actually speaking to each other on a Thursday, which is the traditional Cat for Carers day. So I just wanted to speak a little bit about that. I'm interested because it's attracting. I wouldn't say criticism, a sort of conversation about whether joining in is sort of complicit with a sort of gaslighting of the reality of some of the negative things. It's a really big deal on my street, as you know. And I just wondered for you, as a carer, if you found it encouraging, and does it make you feel appreciated? And also in connection with it, Nikki, do you think that we could harness it? Because there's so much goodwill and love towards carers and actually all essential workers. Do you think that there's the possibility or the hope that we could harness some of that goodwill and that passion that everybody feels to make the changes that you need? So that's two questions, sorry. The first bit is, do you like the clap?
I like the clap. I do. You have to be careful, don't you? I don't want the clap.
No, we're not talking about the sailors.
I love the clapping, and actually I think we've obviously, when we've talked about this like previously, and it was good, our little conversation really made me think, I don't know if it's a British thing. I don't know if it's fair to... I don't know what other countries feel about it. But I think there is a risk sometimes with us as a nation, not wanting to put us all in the same camp, of becoming quite cynical and then turning things into something that's a real chore. And I was talking to some friends and saying, you know, we haven't got much else to do. So, you know, when we're... Obviously, I've been busy, but in the evening at 8 o'clock, there isn't loads else to do apart from watching something that you can pause, you know. There isn't a huge amount, and just to come out and just, for whatever reason, just to clap is a lovely thing to do, and it's a joyous thing to do. And I think there's, you know, I don't want to become cynical about it or turn it into something more than just saying thank you to the people that have really, who deserve it and have always deserved it. And I think
I think it's, I feel like when we spoke about it last time, yeah, we should say we've already spoken about this, haven't we, Nikki? Yeah. And you made me think as well when you said, let's not overcomplicate it. And I also thought after speaking to you, I thought those things can coexist, an expression of gratitude and a demand for change. They can coexist.
Yeah.
So I'm more interested in that. I'm like, let's keep this up and add to it by asking. And with that in mind, because there's so much love, and I think that's the right word. There's so much love for you all.
Yeah, brilliant.
What changes do you want? Would you like, from your sort of perspective, to make your job and your colleagues' job easier? What do you need and what do you want? And when do you want it? Now.
What do we want? I think what I want, well, I was thinking about this again, and so I think that one of the things that can happen, and I think going back to what I was just saying about the sort of becoming cynical, is if you over idolize anyone, you see it happen, don't you, with really famous figures, and they are like the darling of everybody. They're like, you know, everyone's little darling, and everyone thinks they're amazing and they couldn't do any wrong. And then suddenly they do something normal and human. Maybe they've started to believe the hype about themselves, and they do something and suddenly they're like completely rubbish and hopeless and they don't know what they're doing. And I think as a society and with social media, we're a little bit, you know, that is something that's been happening quite a lot. You put people, you know, the 15 minutes of fame type thing.
Yeah.
I think I saw an incredible nurse, and I wish I'd got her name, and I wish I'd seen who she was. I think she was regarding like ITU's, she was, you know, sort of some sort of head of ITU or something. But she said a really sensible thing. She said, look, we're not angels, and we're not heroes. We're people who do, you know, we've trained really hard to do our job, and it's not a vocation. It was a job that we've trained hard to. We're intelligent beings, and we're doing something that we've done specifically because we want to, not because we flew down and, you know, flew down and did a super job. And I think if you look at people as if they do fly down, then they do this amazing thing and they're an angel. And I don't think there's any harm in calling people angels, and I don't have an issue with that at all. But and it's lovely when you are called one, I think, you know. But I think if you put people on a massive, slightly wobbly pedestal, they're going to fall off it, and they're going to fall off and land on their heads. But if you say these people are doing a job that they deserve to be paid for, and that they are really highly trained for, we need to listen to them because they can tell us some really good things, that we can listen to what they're saying. Don't shout at them because you read something on the internet and it told you something else. Just listen to what they're saying with their big, you know, what we go back to, what we said before, their big body of experience. They probably know what they're talking about a little bit. So let's listen to them. Let's give them the things that they need to do their job really well.
That's such a good point, Nick. In a way, it's about simplifying things. I think our like calling people an angel or superhero. And then as you were saying, I thought, do you know what? Angels don't get pay rises, do they? And superheroes don't have employment rights. So actually it's not very useful for you, is it? As a...
I think it's lovely. It's you know, and I think it's great to have people even thinking about people that do, and not necessarily just carers, and you know, not just the NHS or just, but the people in the supermarkets, at the hospice. You know, the housekeepers are amazing. They're just incredible, and what they've done during this is just, it's and like our maintenance guys, and they are guys, but I mean, guys, what they did, how they said, you know, I always say this to my sister, like, suddenly I came in, I literally had an evening off, I went in the next day or the next night, and there was a sink had been rigged up in the corridor ready for everyone to wash their hands when before relatives weren't allowed in, and it was just like,
wow.
Things we need to, that's what I clap for. I clap for those little miracles, and that was because there wasn't, you know, everybody said we've got to get this done, nobody was standing in the way, no one was saying we don't have any money, and it's those things, it's let people do their jobs. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? And I do, you know, obviously it's coming through, keep things simple. Keep it simple.
It's amazing that they just popped up a sink. I mean, that is the sort of everyday little miracle, isn't it? And in terms of, do you think, because one thing that's made me think about is, you know, let's really investigate and dig into a bit how much people are being paid, staff in care homes, the blooming DHL delivery workers, I'm just mentioning those because I saw them today, the refuge collectors, you know, all of those people who've actually been at high risk. One of the things I hope for is a sort of better employment rights. You know, these are old fashioned wants, aren't they, really? And better rates of pay as well. And do you feel like in your profession that the rates of pay are fair? I mean, you might not be comfortable talking about this, but in general terms, do you think that we should take the opportunity to look at that as well?
I think, yeah. I think in general terms, you know, I'm not speaking about where I work, but I think, you know, I think we can always do that. And I think we all... So I think it's about paying lip service to people saying people are amazing and angels. That's great. And that's fine for, you know, a quick thing. And I don't think we should start, again, thinking about that too deeply, so that we then feel, then it becomes a taboo. You know, it becomes a thing of I'm saying the wrong terms or I'm going to upset someone. And that's not helpful, I don't think. But I do think people don't get paid enough. And the, you know, and I think having sort of clear ways of people, really sort of transparent ways of people being paid the correct amount of money for what they're doing, for what they're doing and the sacrifices they're making and those sort of things, you know, I think they need to be looked at, don't they? But yeah, I think you know, going forward in what would be nice to keep is that sort of appreciating what other people do, really.
Yeah, we'll definitely come on to that, because it's good to end on an up. just going sort of specifically into your work, Nikki, I thought about this a lot. I have thought about it a lot, as you know, this sort of challenge of, or the and also the interesting thing about considering hope in the context of illness or pain or any kind of suffering, but particularly with dying and death, and you work in that arena, it's the nature of your work. I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about whether you think it's possible to be hopeful, in terms of when you're dying yourself, if you are with someone that's dying, or for you yourself who care for the dying, how would you say we can find hope at those times, if we can?
Yeah, I think there's loads of hope, and I'm a real sort of advocate for hope, especially in for people who are dying, people who are terminally ill. I think that is something that people almost like go and strike off. They think, oh, well, there'll be no hope in that, you know, there's no hope. But there is. There's like, if you walked in the doors of the hospice, or you're out in the community with somebody who's been cared for in the community by the martlets, you know, the feeling of hope is almost tangible. You know, it is such, you know, and I'm not just saying that, but it really is like, it's just, it hits you in the face, because I think hope doesn't have to be, again, let's keep it simple, but it's like, the thing is, a hope doesn't have, you know, I think I've talked to you about this before, but it doesn't have to be a massive thing. It doesn't. People always think, you know, if I had a terminal illness, or if I, you know, or this is what I'm going to do. We talked about this, climb, you know, a mountain, or do a massive thing. But hope can be something tiny. It can be a hope just to see you. Well, it can be things that's quite big, but to see your little grandchild, you know, be born, or, you know, that some, you know, those things that people do really hang on for, to get somebody home from somewhere, make sure that they come and just say goodbye to, you know, to their, but there can be as much as to sit up and put a little bit of red lippy on, you know. It can be to sit on the edge of the bed. And I was saying to you that sometimes, you know, I say to patients, in this moment, what do you hope for? What can we do to change this? You know, what can we do to just to make you hopeful for that moment? And if that is just to, I don't know, put a nice top on, and that can be hopes for the relatives as well. You know, it can be hopes for the family, I'd just like to see them smile again, or have a little smile, or, you know, those are the things. It can just be so tiny. But I think it's easy to think of hope as this great big massive, you know, all enveloping thing, isn't it? And hope can just be a titchy thing. It can be really small. So I think it's, I think, you know, not just at the hospice, but in my jobs over the years, and that haven't always been in end of life care, but have been in oncology always for the last like 27 years. I think hope's just, it's like a huge thing that's always there, and it carries a lot of people's sort of journey, really.
I was interested in one of the last time you spoke, Nikki, you really made me think, and I thought one of the things that, and hearing you now, one of the things that's interesting for me is I always used to think that hope was placed in the future, and I think I thought that the future was a little way off, but what you made me realise was that when you're in the situation where you're ill or you're dying, you're living with a terminal illness, or you're around someone that is, the time of hope, the time scale of hope changes. And you really made me think about that. Like, it can exist in the moment, as in the cup of tea I'm going to get is going to be a 10 out of 10 cup of tea.
Yeah.
And actually, well, that's really beautiful, that hope, and for us all to learn from that, hope can be now, you know, the next, like I said, the next cup of tea, or my dinner's going to be really nice tonight. And I think that's hopeful for all of us, actually. That's really brilliant. I wondered if you could, had any advice that you might be able to give, Nikki, to anyone who might be trying to help someone or be with someone in usefully, who's gravely ill or dying. And the reason I say usefully is I think a lot of people who aren't professional like you, it's going to happen to us all. We're all going to be in the company of someone that's dying or ill at some point. Mm-hmm. And I think a common thing, certainly in conversations I've had with people, is sort of just feeling a bit useless.
Yeah.
And what advice would you give? Are there simple things that we can do or ways that we could be that would be helpful in that circumstance, do you think?
I mean, I think if it's in terms of somebody who's terminally ill, but they're still moving and getting around, then in terms of that, is just being who you are to them, not trying to be anything new and different, because I think that's what we do. We all do it, don't we? And it's very easy to think you sort of suddenly had to put your gold hat on and do a tap dance when you've never danced in your life. Do you know what I mean? So again, there's a theme in this chat, isn't there? Keep it simple. But just, I think, just not trying too hard. But I think sometimes just if you, being a bit being sort of aware that, so if there's a little tiny thing you can do, you notice I know you preach, you talk about these things a lot. But it's those little things that if you think somebody's struggling and it's your thing to be able to go and get a bit of shopping or do those things, it's the simple things, isn't it? So it's just being there. Or if they look a bit sad, being aware, but not trying to fix it, because I think that's what everybody feels. Not trying to, maybe realising what's your stuff that you're bringing. So I think trying to have as if we all have things, don't we, but try not to bring your own things in, because I think that's when it gets complicated, and when people's own complications, they put them on that person.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. My friend said to me recently, and he is living with a terminal illness, he'd said, I wish people would just come with me and be. And that was a very powerful thing to say, actually. I was really sort of grateful for him for being honest about that. Actually, Nikki, as well, it made it easier. I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And just be you, because they will be your friends or your, you know, well, you can't choose your relatives, can you? But you are who you are, and you're not going to suddenly turn in, you know, that's what I mean. You're not going to suddenly turn into something you're not. But I think sometimes we all feel it. We have to say something that's particular, or we have to be a certain way. But I think just being there for people, and often it's that thing of when you're in a situation, you know, I think of anything where I'm in a situation and I think of people, oh, they'll be amazing, and actually they're not the one for that time. And it doesn't matter if you're not that person for that time, you have to just realize that and think it's okay, just, you know, keep it simple and be who you are, and not worry if you can't be the right person at the right time, because I think you can't always be that.
Do you think part of, I suppose, the pandemic, I mean, I know I'm sort of hyper aware of it, so this might be my prejudice or the bubble that I'm in, but I think the pandemic has brought death a little bit closer to all of us, because statistics and numbers and loss are on the news all the time. And do you think that there's any sort of, do you think it's a good thing in a way that we've been faced with that? I mean, do you think in general it would be better for us as a society to talk about death and dying a little bit more? And if you do, then why do you think it would be better?
Yeah, I think it's really hard, isn't it? I think because that's what I do, that I have quite a skewed sense of talking about death and dying, because it feels very normal to me, because it's the sort of thing that you can't really work in it for years and years without you sitting with your colleagues, you know, and because I've got these amazing colleagues, but you can't help but have a quiet moment and say, what would you, I want a coffin like this, or I want my funeral like that. They better not do that. And, you know, and we have these bizarre conversations of like, if I end up here, will you don't put my hair on the wrong side. So it's really, but you don't have those conversations in real life. And it's like, you forget. And I have come unstuck with that sort of saying things, and I've really upset people, not meaning to, but just it out socially. I've sort of said things and it's been too much. So I think the call to say, even I'm gonna give you, there's somebody that I just watched something of with this in mind, who is amazing, who says exactly what I would always say. But it's about the things that we've got, start to get scared of saying dying, and we say, and I'm really, really aware at work to say they have died. Those words, they shouldn't be words to be afraid of. You know, people don't pass on. There's going to be, you know, you can end up getting yourself into a world of trouble saying words that don't actually say what has happened, or somebody is actively dying, or somebody is about to die. But if you say, you know, I think they're coming to the end now, it could mean all sorts. I think it's really important, and I think it's okay though, but I think it's the more that you don't dare say stuff, the bigger it becomes, doesn't it? You know, the more, you know, if you have a worry and you don't really tell anyone about it, it becomes a massive thing, it becomes a huge elephant in the room. So I think the more we talk about it, the more that we see it's not frightening, and it's, and often, you know, like we were saying earlier, often death can be a really beautiful experience. And that sounds horrible and a bit weird, I know, but it can be something you feel so honoured to be part, or maybe have even made things a little bit better for someone. It's an amazing thing. So I think if we could take some of the mystification away from it, if that's a word, and, you know, maybe just, you know, I think it's always a good thing. It's not a bad thing. And it's not even a bad thing to look at it, like I was saying, to even have those conversations of, oh, blimey, I really don't want to be cremated. You know, it's in a general, not in a, well, you're having your dinner. But, you know.
Well, it'd be great if it was normalised so that it didn't feel like a big thing. But we feel like a little way away from that yet. But it also feels to me like things might be shifting a little bit.
Yeah.
So you can say over your cauliflower cheese or whatever you're eating, or I fancy a Viking funeral or whatever. I've been watching Vikings, that's why I said that.
Yeah, you're liking the Vikings.
I really want to talk to you about your makeovers, but I'm going to come back to that at the end because it's like a glittery end.
Is that the finale?
Glittery end sounds a very double entendre, doesn't it? I've been thinking a lot about absolutely acknowledging the enormous loss and grief of the pandemic, about how there, in amongst all of that, there's loads of glitters of light and a hope. And I wondered, Nikki, if you've noticed anything, either professionally or personally for you, that you're like, actually, this is better, and I might like to keep hold of this particular change when it's over. You know, people have mentioned being able to hear the birds sing or meeting their neighbours. And I wondered if there's been anything like that for you, either at work or in your personal home life. Yeah.
Well, I think a little bit both. I've got two answers.
Oh, good. Answers. Love it.
Yeah, yeah. So in my work life, I have obviously, you know, that like I told you, these things that have been difficult. But I think what I've liked is the smoothness of things, getting things done. So how quickly things can get done. And I think we should all be really impressed with ourselves about that, you know, about how actually we've got a real amazing power to get things done really quickly and make changes very quickly. And, you know, I think that everyone deserves a big pat on the back for that. So and I'm sure that's been happening everywhere, I know. And I know from my friends that work at the hospital, just saying it's that sort of like, just people saying you don't have to do all that stuff that's always taking you hours and hours. Don't do that now. Just put that on the back burner. Let's crack on and do this thing. And I think that focus has been amazing. So it'd be lovely to keep some of that. And I think for me personally, it works, some of that as well, because some of the things that I've just got done and I've realised that actually, you know, I feel like, oh, I've done all right in this. You know, I'm much more resilient than I thought I was, and I can just crack on if I need to. And I think that's good. So that's been my work side. And my home side is very up and down, but I have quite, I don't know if I dare say it because I'm jinxing it, but I've quite enjoyed a bit of the home learning. Most of it I've hated. I'm not a teacher. I think teachers are incredible. But I think those little times just with, you know, with my daughter just doing nice things like baking and doing things that you sort of talk about, but you don't really have time to do. So I look back at the things that have been cancelled so far, you know, during this, and I was like, how on earth was I going to do all that? And actually that's been really nice, just to not have much. I have got loads to do. I'm always going to be a busy person, but it just not have those millions of functions, and to be able to say, actually, no, I don't want to go to that. So that's going to be really good. And I want to take that forward for myself, that not to like overload myself with a million zillion things to do so that I don't enjoy them anymore. It's just like another chore, like, oh, I'm going out for drinks now. Oh, you know, I'm going to this thing.
I've heard that a lot, Nikki, and I realise that we all, I guess, a little bit felt like or all convinced ourselves that saying yes all the time is good.
Yeah,
I know I do, and it is good. There's something really good about that. But I've really enjoyed, sometimes I'm like, oh, I haven't got to go out.
It's quite simple. I think, what have I got to do? Oh, not much. I mean, I do, there's always going to be something I need to do, because that's my, you know, I am a busy person, like a, you know, you're either or, aren't you? Either someone that goes, done it all, and I'm ready to read my magazines, or you're someone that goes, oh, I've got this to do and that to do. I will always do tootle around doing things. But I think when it comes down to it, I'll be like, actually, I'm just going to watch telly. I'm just going to sit. And that's really nice. I'm just going
to sit. A bit slower and maybe a bit nicer to ourselves, isn't it? It was really interesting what you said about getting things done and being able to see that we can get things done, because I actually think that's a really profound thing to say, because I always think you could relate that to this sort of climate change stuff. It's like we were told that things couldn't happen. They've happened, haven't they?
I know. And you look back and you sort of think, blimey. And it's quite odd when you think, you realise how quickly you adapt, because I was doing the work the other day and I was like, this, it doesn't seem normal, of course it doesn't, but it's sort of like, oh, we just put the PP on, you know, we put on masks and gloves and goggles, and we're just in a rhythm now. It's not normal, it's not nice, but it's weird how it seems okay, it seems all right. I'm not fearful to go in, you know, it's the same as home. It's like, yeah, we're used to just going to the supermarket and keeping away from people and standing in a queue or, you know, whatever. It's just weird, isn't it, how you
there's
adapt.
Sort of hope in that for me as well, that like you said, yeah, we're really resilient, we're really adaptable, and actually we have already made a new normal of this, which connects to the next thing I was going to say. You might feel you already answered it, so if you feel you have, that's totally cool. There's been a lot of talk about, there was a bit of talk a little while ago about, oh, when we get back to normal, and then there's a conversation about what the new normal is going to be. And for you, if you were allowed to sort of twinkle your Nikki wand, what would the new normal be for you? What would you like the new normal to be at work, let's say?
I think I would like, well, yeah, I mean, I would like to be back being able to cuddle whoever it is that you know, appropriately, obviously. You know, I think it really, like my colleagues, I just didn't realise how, because, you know, I've worked with a lot of them a long, long time, and I didn't realise how much we give to each other. So, I mean, getting back to that would be amazing, but the new normal, I think just trying not to forget, which we all do, we all think, it's like with anything you do, you know, you go on a diet and say, I'm never going to start eating chocolate like I did before, I'm going to be really good. And before you know it, you've got a chocolate bar in your mouth, haven't you? So I do think it's going to be a bit like that. I think it's like, oh no, we won't go back, we won't do that. And before I know it, I'll be going, oh, I've got so much to do, I've got so... So I think just trying to remember those things and just with remembering the feeling of loss, not being able to just touch a patient's hand when it was right, and not being able to just have the relatives living in for a few days while, you know, their relatives dying. Those things, to try to appreciate that as the new normal. You know, things will go back. Hopefully, you know, we'll be able to have everyone in. We'll be able to have the dog and the guinea pigs and whatever. We haven't had guinea pigs.
That's the new normal.
Oh yeah, that'd be good. But you know, but appreciate what that means, and hopefully, people will appreciate that too a bit more. You know, because when you have that, it's taken away. You know, when you don't, you can't just wander around the shops or whatever. It's, you suddenly think, oh, that's going to be so lovely to do that.
Yeah, and that tiny little thing. I think what you said is really pertinent, actually, about that we will forget, which is, because, so I've been, I think I've already told you that. So I've been literally, every time I think, oh, I've really missed this, I've been writing it down. And it's actually even changed over the last few weeks. And some of it has been, putting it in this little jar, and they're all super simple things, which is encouraging, because I'm like, I know I can do them again. They're not, you know, they're like going to swim in the Lido, they're not hugely ambitious things. And if you were to have a few of those little pieces of paper in my jar of things that you've missed, apart from hugging, because I know that that's on the high there, are there other things that you've missed, Nikki, that you want, that you really, you can't wait to get back to, that you would have in your little jar?
Yeah, I was thinking, and actually we might copy you and we might have a little jar, because the kids thought that was flipping marvellous.
It's great, yeah. It's not my idea, so... Yeah.
It's a good idea.
It is.
Yeah, it's brilliant. So, yes, one of my ones was that I think that we have an amazing coffee shop down the road from us, 44 Poets, and
That's the best name ever.
44 Poets, yeah, it's on Poets Corner, yeah, and it's brilliant. And I really miss just going down there and just chewing the fat with friends and just doing and we used to do quite sneaky, like, have you got 5 minutes? And it was quite, it's always turned into a bit of an adventure and a mission. And I just think, you know, I just felt that it's just a really nice place to go. And I really miss that. And I really miss their supercharged coffees. And they all, you know, they always did a good flat white. So I really miss that. And I think that would definitely go into my jar.
It's nice though, isn't it? That's a nice one as well, because you can pretty much guarantee you will get 44 Poets back. So I find that really a sort of really hopeful thing. This is a big one, Nikki, before I get onto the glitter talk. what do you hope for in the future for yourself and for your family? And for your community and for the world. What would you hope for? You're allowed to hope for anything, Nikki. I mean, they could all come under one hope or wish, if you like, but they might be different for you or for the world, I don't know.
I think, so, I mean, it's that thing, isn't it, that, you know, I know, and I've heard people on your podcast before as well, you know, it's like to have an end of the virus and things like that, but, yeah, of course, you hope for that, but I think what I hope for is just everyone to be all right and have a bit of inner peace, because that's, you know, just everyone to be, especially for the kids, and I think, you know, every parent agree that you always have that sudden moment of like, oh my goodness, I hope they'll be all right. I hope they're going to be okay. They're not going to, you know, nothing terrible is going to happen to them when they're 13, or, you know, you just want So I just think for everyone to be all right and have a sense of inner peace, not have lots of turmoil and worry. Just be all right. That's a bit woolly, isn't it?
No, I don't think it is. I think actually this sort of period of pause, even though it's brought loads of hecticness with it, it has reminded us of peace, the value of peace, hasn't it? So I think that's great. No, that's the... I mean, what more could you wish for?
And a bit of inner peace too. Yeah. I think inner peace is really important, because then that will... Hopefully that will bring out a peace as well, wouldn't it?
And how do you think we might be able to help each other with that, get inner peace?
Well, I think it's just being calm and listening and I do feel like before this all happened, that I mean, I felt it without even knowing that you know, COVID-19 existed, but I just felt we were getting to this sort of head of like manicness, and not necessarily for any reason, but you know, that sort of head of like busyness and just shouting over each other almost, you know, and just heads down and in our phones, and you know, perhaps paying lip service to lots of things, are you know, being good or neighbourly or whatever, and then actually not doing it because we're all too busy with all the other things, or what do they think about me, and oh, do I look good on this, and what are they doing, and it. So I think this has calmed that, and we've realised that, and people are being really neighbourly and people are being good, and there is some positives. And I think if we can just, you know, if we can just calm.
I think it's such a beautiful thing to hope for. And I agree with you as well. I feel for everyone, because I think what I've really found so hopeful is, I think it's like everyone's been dying to help each other, and everyone's been yearning to be better neighbours, and everyone's been dying to just spend a bit more time in the garden and all of that stuff, and now some of us have had some of those opportunities, at least. I hope everybody's had one. So yeah, I think people are great. I just think that we got ourselves into a bit of a spin, didn't we?
Yeah, that's why. But that was just my, you know, my personal feeling, that we all just got ourselves into, we were just a bit busy and we forgot. And I think it's just reminded people, and also, you know, just the sense of humour that people have gotten all over the world, not just, but the things, you know, some of the stuff, though I did get a bit overwhelmed by all the sort of like WhatsApp groups and things, you know, but I think now everything's calmed a bit, and there's not 150 WhatsApps, and also everything's on silent, it's a bit more, you know, I've got over that, but the things that you get, the videos and things, honestly, they have just made me laugh so much, and I just think, gosh, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, you know, just, really sort of creative and funny responses.
Yeah.
Before we run out of time, I really, really want to talk to you about your amazing work that runs alongside you being a nurse as a makeup artist, Nikki, and your makeovers, which I just love. And you and I worked together at a project at the Royal Albert Hall. You did the makeup for our version of Midsummer Night's Dream, which was wonderful. But could you talk about how that coexists with your nursing? Because I think it's really fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. I decided that I was at work, and a patient who was young had said that they had had a makeover for like a red carpet event that they'd managed to get themselves into, and they had a makeover by a makeup artist, and because they were a young person with terminal cancer, they didn't know how to talk to them, and they were a little bit inappropriate, and even though the makeup was good at the end, it was a bit awful. And I just thought, I'm quite arty, and I always love a bit of makeup, and you know, I love clothes and you know, things like that. I always have done, and that was always something that I might have gone towards, you know, if I hadn't have nursed. And I hadn't really used my creative side very much. So I thought, I wonder if I could do a makeup course. And I also thought, we have quite a lot of shotgun wedding. It's not shotgun wedding, but we have very quickly organised weddings at the hospice sometimes, and you know, people having really special events where they want to look good, or other their children's weddings. So I just thought, how lovely if I could, for free, I could offer them a makeover, and I could to bring all my stuff into the hospice. So it doesn't matter how poor you are, and because I've got my nursing skills as well, It's a very specific thing that I don't have to call someone in, and I don't get panicky if someone's not breathing right or if someone's, you know, needs their oxygen on or whatever. And I won't start panicking if they need to light, close their eyes or whatever. So having those skills as well, I just thought, oh, wouldn't it be brilliant to marry the two? And it's been amazing. I think it's like the most special thing, and I've been really well supported by my, you know, my managers support me really well in it. And it was something before this happened that I was going to make a bit more of a thing about, because it's something that not a lot of people necessarily knew about it. But I always do it as a very different person. So we decided that it wouldn't be something that I would just start doing as a nurse in my nursing day. So I do it very separately. So I'll talk to someone and I make an appointment with them, and I say, I'll come in. And I'm very lucky because I live down the road from the, you know, I don't live very far away from the hospice. So I can come along and I say, oh, look, I'll come and see you, and we'll make an appointment. And then I'll talk to reception, to our ward clerks, and they will make sure they give me a ring if the person doesn't feel like it. But I come in with a big trolley. And I have a beautiful trolley, and bring my trolley in, and we do makeup, and yeah, done a wedding. I've done some really lovely events, and just some nice, just in because people like makeup.
So some sort of beef is, so if someone has got a sort of special event or a day, it must be so fantastic as well for them. So when you do that, they know you're a nurse as well, don't they?
Yeah, it can be a bit confusing. It has confused people, and I've learned quite a lot through it. I've definitely had moments where I thought, oh, I won't do that again, which we all learn. You know, it's like I said with the nursing, and I haven't made a massive song and dance about it at work because I felt like I had to do a few things for myself to feel confident in what I was doing. And, you know, I've done some stuff at home. Obviously, I've done some, like, friends and, you know, their friends. I've done quite a few sort of weddings now and things for them, and that's been really helped my confidence to then go into work and know what's appropriate and what isn't. So it can be a bit confusing to people, but I'm very clear about it, and I'm definitely going to have a little, you know, do a leaflet when we're up and running again. Obviously, my trolley's in retirement at the moment. It's quietly sitting there waiting.
Glittering and glowing when it's
there. Yeah, I've got separate one for the glitter. wouldn't fit in.
As well as that amazing service, I was just thinking, Nikki, that if anyone's listening, I was wondering if you might be able to, and I can also include this in the written material about the podcast, if there are any online resources that might be able to help people who are dying themselves or whose loved one is dying, just with practical. Oh, she's got a book, everyone.
I know. I quickly wrote it down. Thank you. My manager kindly, I suddenly had a moment when you said this, and I thought, oh, I don't know anything. Because I think, again, when you're in it, I don't necessarily, you know, some people are amazing, they do, but I don't necessarily do some sort of light reading about dying because, you know, it's sort of in my head. But there is an amazing, she is apparently retired palliative care physician, but her name is Catherine Mannix, and she comes up, and the thing that I just, before we talked, I just had a quick look at, which is brilliant, which is the thing, it's on BBC Ideas, but you can see it on YouTube, and it says it's called Dying Is Not As Bad As You Think. And if I could sum up, I mean, I just felt like, oh, that's like everything I think, you know, it's amazing. She talks a lot, and she does loads of things, but it's basically just about raising the taboo and getting back to perhaps where we used to be, where death wasn't a mystical, magical, frightening thing. So I think, you know, that's sort of on the lines I'd come from. So that's really good. And the other, just specific to where I work, so our hospice, as any other hospices will as well if you're in a different area, but our hospice is Martlet's Hospice in Hove, and they've got a website which has got loads of really good information on it as well, and it signposts you to quite a lot of things. So that's martlet.org.uk.
That's brilliant. And Nikki, how, if someone was listening and wanted to help contribute, as in donate, What's the most direct route to make a donation or any sort of financial support or any other support that you might need?
So for the hospice, though, there's actually a crisis appeal at the moment because obviously the hospice is a charity. It's not NHS funded. Some hospices are, but it's a charity. So all the shops being closed down, and I mean all hospices are having, there's a huge impact. And I think that's something in the media that hasn't been, maybe is a bit more now, but they talked about NHS or private care homes, and I think charities were never really, you know, were mentioned, which, I mean, again, I don't think that's not something you should get angry about or sort of for. It's just people don't know, do they? You do if you've had experience for whatever reason, but you don't if you haven't. So, yes, you can either go online, and I think there's ways on the Martlets website, there's ways of giving. And it does say there is a bit about that if you want to give. And there are, if you looked at Martlets Crisis Appeal, there's that as well, and I think that, yeah, those are the sort of main ways, but probably online, yeah, and always, okay. Obviously, you know, I think all hospices are going to feel it. I think there will be help for them, but, you know, it's going to be, I think, all places that run on charity are going to struggle as well, aren't they?
Yeah. I guess what we've seen, again, which is it hopefully has encouraged you and has encouraged me, is that, again, is sort of how much people do want to help, actually, you know, and that isn't, people aren't always able to help financially, but I think, I don't know whether you'd agree with it, that's made me feel really hopeful. I thought, actually, people do want to help each other, they do want to support charities, they do want to sort of help as much as possible. And later on tonight, when I'm clapping for you and your comrades, I might shout, Nikki, like that.
Oh,
Martlets.
London.
Yeah.
Do a loud shout.
Well, I remember that. I'm gonna take home with me, dying is not as bad as you think.
Yeah.
It's a good take home message.
And that's definitely Catherine. That's Catherine Mannix. And it's really great. That little, it's only probably a few minutes. I looked at it, I watched it just before I came to talk to you. While I ram some spaghetti on toast down, it's really beautifully done as well. The way it's just a really quick 2-minute thing, but it's just very, it sums everything up, I think. And yeah, keep it simple. I think that's the thing, isn't it? Keep it simple. That's my lesson learned.
Thank you so much, darling.
Oh,
bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Great advice from Nikki. And what I sort of took away from that kind of can be applied, I guess, to anybody who just sort of needs your company as a friend. To be a good friend is just to sort of hang out and not try to be any different and just not try to fix people or make it better, but just to spend time with people. Feels like really good advice, that, and keeping it simple. Thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to joining you next time. Bye.